Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. Jamie, I'd like to turn to internal controls. Being a good steward of taxpayers' money requires having a rigorous internal control system. Could you elaborate on how you're embedding and maturing an internal control model within your organization? And what are some of the key challenges you face in this area?
Well, we're trying to take a very empirical approach to internal controls that emphasizes real-world testing. And that involves challenging our conceptions about where they're effective and where they're not. We have a very disciplined process of preparing an annual statement of assurance for the Secretary of the Air Force to provide to the Secretary of Defense each year. But the true internal control environment really does require poking, prodding, seeing where policies are being strictly adhered to, where there may be some sloppiness. So we've been working to increase the rigor of our inspections to find whether our quality assurance team is catching any deviations from process. That's a key part of our internal control effort. I would also say systems modernization is key to our enhancement of internal controls because so many of our legacy systems lack the edit controls and limitations that a modern financial or logistics system would have. So as we move to these modern systems, we will be able to catch problems more readily. Interestingly, though, the process of deploying some of these new systems has also brought to light some of the existing deficiencies in ways that are helpful. For example, when we import data from legacy financial or non-financial systems into our new accounting system, DEAMS, we often get numerous items that are rejected because they don't fit the expected data types. And that lets us look back and find areas where, again, adherence to process or policy isn't quite right. We've found that with other areas where we've fielded new systems or capabilities as well. And that's frankly been helpful for me as a diagnostic tool, bringing things to light that otherwise might have stayed below the radar screen. In general, I can say the Air Force has a strong internal control environment. We've got financial management personnel who are deeply committed to stewardship. But it's an organization of hundreds of thousands of people managing billions of dollars. And so there's always room for improvement in that stewardship and building a more rigorous control environment that is still conducive to conducting the mission. Of course, we can't put handcuffs on every transaction. We can't tie down an airplane or else it can't fly.
Jamie, let's talk a little bit about acquisition, since it is a significant aspect of the enterprise, the Air Force in this case, and that I think we'd all agree it's very important to get acquisition right. In that regard, could you elaborate a bit on your role in improving the Air Force acquisition, the relationship, the context, and how specifically are you working to improve cost estimating, perhaps proactively, as well as strengthening program control capabilities?
Mm. You've hit on two of the key parts that I'm working very hard. And Air Force Financial Management has a key role in the Air Force's overall acquisition improvement plan, which has been a multi-year effort to advance the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Air Force's key priority of recapturing acquisition excellence. Our role in that is focused primarily on that cost estimating piece, but also on broader acquisition financial management. Of course, each major acquisition program has a chief financial officer of its own that is responsible for managing the budgetary resources in the program, for ensuring that fiscal law principles are followed to the letter, and ensuring generally the efficient use of resources. So let me turn first to cost estimating and then talk about program control in a little more detail. The cost estimating piece is a challenge in terms of building organizational capacity, and that's organizational capacity at headquarters, but also out at each of the program offices that's responsible for running our major programs. That involves getting the right people, and we still have a long way to go on that, simply because the Air Force runs so many programs. We have many, many small programs, and then quite a few extremely large ones, like the F-35 and the Next Generation Bomber and some of our key satellite systems. We have a responsibility to ensure that each of those programs has a fully qualified, credentialed cost estimator on its roles in order to provide the advice to the program manager that they need to have a good negotiating position with the contractor, to bring credible estimates in for any adjustments to the program that have to occur, and to help them through the acquisition process, which can sometimes seem a little Byzantine. So we're working to increase that staffing. And again, to be very frank, that workforce was drawn down dramatically in the late 90s and early 2000s. And there's a good ways to go to bring folks in and to bring folks in and get them the experience and education they need to be fully effective. But Mr. Rich Hartley, who runs the Air Force Cost Analysis Agency, he's truly a phenomenal leader in that community with deep respect across the whole of government in the cost estimating community. You also mentioned program control. And program control is it's an office within an acquisition program office. It's a capability within an acquisition program office that I like to refer to as the heartbeat of the program office or the metronome. They are responsible for the schedule, for the budget, for much of the management support within that program office. It's an absolutely key position. And unfortunately, over the years, Air Force financial managers, while retaining officially functional responsibility for that, had largely abandoned it. We have been working very closely with our colleagues in Air Force acquisition to rebuild there. Because in a very complicated world where our acquisition program managers work nowadays, with so many competing demands on the programs, difficult, challenging legislative environment, difficult, challenging budgetary environment, having good folks in that role is critical. And so we're working to vector some high-flying officers and civilians into those roles. We're also working to give them the tools they need to succeed.
The theme, again, we go back to challenges and pressures and economic pressures and fiscal responsibility and all, I guess, all we've been talking about throughout the interview. Maybe we could distill it to the question or the comment about department-wide cost-cutting efforts and those specifically within the Air Force to realize savings, to look at business operations in a more efficient manner. Could you talk a little bit about the key initiatives being pursued along those lines?
Well, the Air Force is been very aggressive in seeking to find efficiencies and savings. As you probably know, we identified over $33 billion in five-year savings as part of the 2012 President's budget submission just within the Air Force. That's a big chunk of resources, and those were resources that we were able to redirect to higher priorities, pull them out of support activities and lower priority efforts and move them to key areas like building a next-generation bomber aircraft in order to ensure that the Air Force and the United States as a whole has the ability to project power globally deep into this century. We've also looked across our personnel manning in order to ensure that we've got our organizations right-sized, that we've got reporting chains that make sense and aren't creating excess work, and that we have a total management structure that doesn't overwhelm the pointy end of the spear, which is sometimes a challenge in a bureaucratic organization. We're executing in the midst of fiscal year 2012 right now, but the efficiency plan that we laid out, the $33.3 billion that we found in efficiencies, are plans now, and they need to become reality. And they're going to become reality at base level, where financial managers and operational commanders have to work together to actually achieve the efficiencies. Some of them are stroke of a pen, right? We eliminate an organization and restructure and certain positions go away. And then as the personnel process works there, those savings accrue and you have to monitor and make sure mission still gets accomplished. But others of these require extensive, detailed implementation effort that's going to occur over a number of years. We've seen tremendous strides from our mobility forces to adopt some new techniques and technologies that will allow them to be much more fuel efficient, saving hundreds of millions of dollars. These are not trivial amounts of savings. So as we at the headquarters turn our attention to the next round of budget decisions and the decisions necessary to live within the more than $450 billion reduction in planned defense budgets that were laid in as a result of the votes this summer on the Budget Control Act that was passed over the summer. We need to ensure that we're also achieving those planned efficiencies that we built before, which are only coming to fruition just now.
Could you talk a little bit about the benefits, the pros and cons, when we look at approaches in terms of cost reductions, cost takeouts, cost cutting? Does an organization, do you think, benefit from some balance of targeted cuts versus a proverbial peanut butter or salami slice? And if so, could you cite some examples?
I'll tell you that I think targeted cuts are always the first preference. In a large and distributed organization, there are times when giving targets to subordinate organizations in order to develop their own targeted cuts is also a good approach. And we've tried to focus primarily on the former with strategic targeted cuts identified at headquarters rather than the latter, the salami slice or target issuing. But there is a role for both. Among the efficiency efforts that we have underway is one I'm managing where we did provide some specific targets to our individual commands and allowed them to come up with their own proposals. That's a comparatively small portion of that $33.3 billion I mentioned. The majority of them are focused individual initiatives that need to be fleshed out and implemented at local levels, but where the strategic approach has been identified. Cost takeout is hard, though, and it's hard in a government organization where you have a lot of limitations on your freedom of action for good reasons. Prioritization is hard when, especially for a service like the Air Force, so much of the capability we provide to the nation is almost like a utility. You know, the satellite communications are relied upon by huge swaths of our defense establishment. The intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability that we're bringing to today's fight in Iraq and Afghanistan is relied upon by the whole joint team and other elements of government. We've tried to do those strategic choices as much as possible. There's always a little element of the salami slice, or I like to think of it more as providing targets. But it is a key effort that we're carrying out right now, this efficiency focus, and it's getting a huge amount of most senior management attention. And so that tends to push to true strategic choices rather than the salami slice.
Just a real quick question around Shared Services Center. I understand that several years ago, the financial management organization within Air Force introduced this concept, this model. Do you see yourself expanding the use and application of the shared services model across the Air Force? And where, what domains do you think that might work?
So we're applying shared services models where they make the most sense, and we're taking a very factual, empirical approach to it. Back in 2007, the Air Force stood up a financial services center aimed at providing consolidated backroom military and travel pay functions at a single site. And as we've observed the actual results with the center, we found that centralization of our manual travel pay, so this is people doing complex trips where they have to file a paper voucher for reimbursement because they're doing all sorts of wonderful things that our airmen do around the world, that centralization of that was a significant cost savings. We have found in practice that centralization of military pay transactions, which tend to be simpler and more document-driven, that centralization of those ended up not producing cost savings. So we're walking away from that centralization, returning the personnel that were doing that to base level where they can be in direct contact with their customer and provide the sort of direct hands-on support the customers need. Most of those are military personnel performing that role, which actually leads me to an important related point. In most organizations, the expectation would be that the financial operation, which is a support function, should be run as efficiently as possible as with the minimum number of people required and so forth. In the military, it's a little different because financial personnel in the military are a support function, but they're not just a peacetime support function. So at any one time, we've got a couple hundred Air Force financial managers deployed overseas in combat zones, doing everything from carrying around bags of money to reimburse vendors when they're traveling with special operations forces in places where there's no infrastructure to support them, to dealing with deployed Army soldiers who have their own pay and entitlement questions while they're based in Iraq or Afghanistan. And that mission, which includes carrying weapons, being prepared to destroy records and currency if you're overrun by the enemy, that's a business that you can make somewhat more efficient, but you don't want to make it too efficient because you need a little surplus of capacity there just in case. You don't want to work on the ragged edge. So we're trying to simultaneously ensure that in a peacetime or a steady state contingency environment, we can very efficiently conduct our day-to-day business, but also that we have this latent capacity that if the nation needs hundreds of financial personnel to deploy on a moment's notice and do things like help reconstruct in Haiti after a devastating natural disaster, or assist in Japan in the aftermath of a tsunami, or deal with a pop-up hot shooting war, that we've got financial personnel who have that skill set as well, even if it's not the skill set that they're using in a day-to-day office environment.
What does the future hold for financial management within the U.S. Air Force? We will ask Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.